I am Plant on the Line. This is the commentary.ca. Joining me now is the Liberal MP for Ajax Pickering in Ontario, Mark Holland. He was first elected to the House of Commons in 2004 and is the Liberal opposition critic for Public Works and Procurement. He sits on both the Government Operations and Public Accounts Committee. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Mark Holland. Good morning, Mr. Holland.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Ottawa Mayor Larry O'Brien seems to be in a bit of trouble. You've been discussing this, a lot of other people have, and when discussing this, they've mentioned the name John Baird. What's the connection between the two?
Well, we have a lot of questions, and I think when you take a look at how things unfolded, there's inconsistencies that just don't add up, and we're seeking answers. One of those is the fact that Mr. O'Brien seemed very confident he was able to secure a federal appointment. In fact, the charges that he is facing is not for the money that was involved, but for the fact that there was an inducement of a federal position. So there had to be, you know, one would think, a reasonable expectation that he could secure this. Secondly, the OPP had, which is the Ontario Provincial Police, heard testimony that said that there was a meeting that took place allegedly between Mr. Baird and Larry O'Brien where this appointment was discussed. The other thing we have questions on was the fact that Mr. Baird was very unusually involved in the municipal elections with the whole light rail project, and seemed to have a very vested interest in the outcome of the process, and he was extremely involved, which is very odd for a minister to be so involved in a municipal election. So all of those things, when you add them up, and then as well you look at the fact that Mr. O'Brien had offered to raise $500,000 to help get rid of Stockwell Day, and that the leader that's replaced Stockwell Day was Stephen Harper. You add all of these things up, there's a lot of connections to the federal government, and these things have to be answered.
Let's move on to Afghanistan, because it seems to it'll play prominent in the following session ahead. Well, when do you go back? When does the House continue to sit?
It'll be a week this Monday.
Afghanistan will dominate the agenda, I'm sure. The panel headed by John Manley, their report is due when?
The report is, I don't know if there's an exact date, but it's due out very soon.
And at that point, this will go to a vote in the House, whether to extend the mission in Afghanistan?
Yes, we're expecting that there's going to be a vote to extend the mission to 2011, and we would expect that to have no later than the end of spring. So I would certainly expect that in the next couple of months.
Will this report, whenever this comes out, have an effect on what the government will propose to do in terms of whether we stay or leave Afghanistan in the short term?
Well, if there's one thing we know about the government is that it doesn't pay a lot of attention to things that are external to the government, and so I don't know how much attention they'll pay to the report per se. I think they'll try to use it to justify whatever decision they've already made, if history is any indicator. And that's a big concern, because the mission in Afghanistan is, in my opinion, way off track. The reality is that more than half of the Afghan economy is fueled by the illicit trade of opium. We're fighting a drug war there, and until we legitimize that economy, we're never going to be successful. And secondly, there has been far too much focus on the combat mission and not nearly enough focus on humanitarian work and on reconstruction. The net result of that is that we're not winning the hearts and minds of people on the ground. They're not seeing an improvement in their quality of life. And, you know, if we don't have winning the local Afghani people over, I don't see how the mission overall can be successful. So on a number of different fronts, I think it's off track, and I don't know how much this report is going to look at that specifically as well.
Your leader, Stéphane Dion, and his deputy, Michael Ignatieff, were in Afghanistan. What did they see or learn there?
Well, I think much of what I was talking about, that, you know, this is a desperate place, that they have seen over the period of many, many years, nothing but strife and pain and hardship and war and violence, and that unfortunately is not abating, that they are still facing a very dangerous, volatile situation, that they very much want to have a different life, that they want to see the violence lifted from their lives, that they want to see the opportunity to have an economy that isn't based on opium, that is successful, and that they're going to be able to improve and augment their quality of life. They're just not seeing that today. And I think you're seeing a very dispirited people who are increasingly losing faith in NATO efforts to help secure democracy in their country.
Is that what Afghan officials have said, though, to Mr. Dion? That I mean, do they? I mean, I don't think they suggest that Canada should pull out. I think
I don't think we would suggest that either. I think that what they're hearing from Afghan officials, I think it depends upon the individual and perhaps. perhaps their individual position. Of course, Afghan officials do not want us to leave. And I think that we have to be careful about when we talk about our role in Afghanistan, what we're talking about is a change in our mission, not completely disappearing. I mean, when you take a look at the situation in Afghanistan, it really requires us to refocus. And I think we have carried the heavy lifting on the combat mission. We've really suffered terribly, both in loss of lives and also in terms of a tremendous cost. What we're saying is that our mission needs to be in Afghanistan to focus on rehabilitation, reconstruction, and legitimization of that economy, not to leave them entirely, and that other NATO partners have got to pick up the ball on some of the more dangerous combat portions where we've carried a disproportionate load in the past. And I would also say that that the combat mission makes no sense if we are going to continue on the path we're going, which is essentially a mission that's leading nowhere, that's an exercise of futility as it is today.
The Manley panel seemed to have been dismissed by your party, but recently your party had made a submission to the panel. Is that somewhat legitimizing the panel headed by Mr. Manley?
I think at the end of the day, whatever process the government decides to undertake, we have to try to get them to see the situation in the light that is fulsome, and that takes a look at some of the issues that I've just been talking about. And so we have to use whatever mechanism we have to see positive change impacted and to see this mission put on the right track. And so I think it's appropriate that we would comment to the to this body, even though at the end of the day we feel that it's pretty self-evident what has to be done.
Back to your leader's visit to Afghanistan, he's called for on Wednesday the resignation of Helena Gurgis. Why?
Well, I think without having been all that involved in the situation, I think that he feels that she's mishandled the file and that her comments to date have not been appropriate.
There's a lot of talk about the nomination for the by-election in Saskatchewan, the appointment of Joan Beattie as your party's candidate there.
Right.
Has the situation been mishandled, do you think, by your party?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, these are always difficult things. These are not easy issues to handle. Trying to find the best candidates for particular ridings and what process is best to move forward with. You know, Stéphane Dion made a commitment to ensure that we had at least one-third of our candidates in the next election being women, that we would find women of distinction and who had proved themselves as individuals who would represent Canada very strongly in the House of Commons and hopefully also be a big part of a cabinet that Mr. Dion would put together. So, you know, he's been very aggressive in finding star female candidates, and she certainly fits that category. And so I think, you know, it wasn't easy, but I think it was the right decision.
How do you address, though, the concerns of the, I guess it's your former constituency association there in that riding who are upset?
Well, you say to them, you understand that, that, you know, it's not easy, but this is why, you know, in these processes, the leader does have the discretion to make these appointments, you know, so that we can get the right kind of balance and have individuals who bring different perspectives in. And we'd say that there are other opportunities, there's other ridings. Where there will be open nominations where they can participate in, and say that they're very much, you know, we very much want them to continue to be involved and be part of the process. But I think all of us who've been involved in the party understand that not every riding is open, and that a few of them are appointed, not many. And that when that happens, it's you have to look at the bigger picture. And I think when you look at this particular situation, the bigger picture is pretty obvious.
Yeah, I mentioned that you're a member of the Government Operations and Public Accounts Committee. The goings-on of committees in the House of Commons became quite apparent and visible in the last couple of months, especially with the whole Mulroney-Schreiber affair. The Ethics Committee was front and center. Where are we on the inquiry? And I guess the Ethics Committee will conclude their report and then a public inquiry will be called. Is that correct?
Well, I think there's some fear that there's going to be overlap between the two processes, so that you're going to have the Ethics Committee and a public inquiry covering the same territory. And I think what's been said is they want one process to build on the other, so that there's not two processes that are running parallel to each other, not using one another's information, and you're recovering, you know, sort of re-going over the same ground again and again. But the idea is for the Ethics Committee to appropriately have a few more witnesses and to conclude their process in a timely fashion, and then to start the public inquiry I would have liked to have seen the public inquiry start sooner, because it means now that we're going to have to wait a long time for this process to come to a conclusion. But it would flow out of the ethics committee and make sure that it's not duplicating some of their work, which I think is appropriate.
Do you think the inquiry, the public inquiry that's been called for, is that limited in its scope? That's something that I've read and heard.
Yeah, I think that public inquiry is far too limited. I think that they've, that's one area that they've really failed on, and the reason that they've limited it is to limit their exposure to the mistakes that they've made and some of their own indiscretions, including the fact that a lot of this was known for a long time, and why did they not take action? 9 months beforehand, the Prime Minister's office was getting letters from Karl-Heinz Schreiber detailing all of the allegations that would later become so explosive in public. Why didn't they act on them then? I mean, there was a Fifth Estate report that came shortly after the Conservatives came into power that prompted the Justice Department to commence an investigation. For some reason, that was killed, that was kiboshed. Why? I mean, why did they kill this investigation that was underway? And they killed it shortly after entering office. So there's a lot of question marks on this about their own behavior and how they treated this file and whether or not they put Mr. Maroney's interests ahead of serving justice. And those are questions we think need to be answered.
Can the Ethics Committee, though, extend it or expand its own report, its own inquiry?
Well, the committee is master of its own destiny. So at the end of the day, the committee can make a determination to do whatever it wants to do. The Prime Minister can't direct a committee, although certainly he has tried. So it's the committee, if they make a determination to explore areas that the public inquiry will not, is deliberately omitting, then they have the prerogative to do that, yes.
Now, the budget, when that comes out, I guess, sometime next month, correct?
We don't know the exact date, but one presumes that it will be a February document as opposed to a March document.
I've read on your Facebook notes that you feel that it'll be a more modest document, and you say that your party ought to defeat it.
I think I have to be careful. I think that it depends on what's in it. It depends on what they put forward. I think it is going to be a lot more modest. I think it has to be. They've given away the farm in GST cuts and a few other really gimmicks. I mean, they're not sound policy. They're gimmicks. That have cost this enormous amount of money, and it leaves very little fiscal capacity to do much of anything. And what we have now is a slowing economy. A lot of people say that we're already in a recession, if not on the brink of one. And so we've got a very tumultuous time ahead. And so we have to be very careful with this budget, because if they go ahead and try to give away the farm and really sink us back into a position of deficits, then we just responsibly couldn't support that. If it is a very modest document and they make a genuine attempt to work with the other parties, then that perhaps that's something we can support. Unfortunately, their history over this minority government has not been one where they seek to compromise or to work with other parties. So right now I'm not holding out a lot of hope that this is a document we're going to be able to work with. But by the same token, I reserve judgment, and I think we actually have to wait to see it. But I think it will be sooner rather than later that we see the budget. I don't think they'll wait a long time to bring it out.
The Bloc Québécois leader, Gilles Duceppe, has predicted that an election call could be as early as a month away. The NDP's in a fighting mood. Where is your party on this? I mean, will your party pull the trigger that'll begin an election campaign?
Well, I think, the smartest thing, and certainly advice that I've been giving, is for us to really look at this on an issue-by-issue basis and to make a decision that is preeminently defendable to the electorate. At the end of the day, what the electorate doesn't want to hear is, considerations of, well, it was the best time for us to go, so we went because we thought we could win the most seats. We have to be able to go back and explain during an election why there is an election. I think people have had their fill of federal elections, and if they're going to have one, they want there to be a very good reason for it. So if there's a matter of principle where we say, well, this is simply something that we can't support and we don't believe the country supports, Afghanistan could be that, the environment could be that, the death penalty issue could re-emerge as one that's of that type of ilk, then we can do that. But I don't think we should look for any opportunity to fell the government just for felling the government. I think that we have to do it for sound and principled reasons, and if we can't find a way to advance the agenda of the nation and make it work, then an election would be appropriate. But the reality is people did vote for a minority government. They want a minority government to work together, and I think we have to try to make that happen. If it can't happen, if we continue to have a governing party which refuses to compromise or work with other parties or acknowledge the priorities that Canadians have in majority, then yeah, we've got to go to the polls. But it has to be for those kinds of reasons.
Is your party prepared in terms of its election apparatus for an election?
Yeah, I think we're absolutely prepared. You know, I think there are different regions that are at different states of preparedness, but by the time an election would roll around, I feel very confident of our degree of preparedness.
And the by-elections that have been called, one in the riding next door to mine, Vancouver Quadra,
right.
What do you see your party's chances there?
Well, I think in the two Toronto ridings, we feel exceptionally good. I'm feeling very, very confident about those ridings, having been through them. Haven't been through Vancouver Quadra, although I hope to, before the by-election. And from what I'm hearing, very good things. But I think by-elections are always about local dynamics and local issues and can be very different. And so you never take anything for granted. I think we have to go in there and work for people's trust extremely hard. We've got a great candidate. So we're not going to take it for granted. I think that's one that we're going to be working very hard for.
To wrap up, Mark, people are often cynical about politicians and politics. You're relatively young, but you've had immense experience in the arena. Enlighten us as to your role as an MP. People were kind of cynical at just around Christmas when they found out you all had about a month and a half holiday. But you've kept busy, haven't you?
Oh, sure. And I try to be very careful about the words that I use, because, you know, sometimes we call it a break, but it's not. I mean, the reality is that we're working hard back here in our constituencies and doing things in different parts of the country. A lot of people don't recognize that the biggest part, a job of an MP, is not to be in Ottawa. The biggest job of an MP is to help people in the riding, to listen to them, to be involved in the events and happenings in the riding. And if you're going to be successful politically, you have to do that. And so we invest an enormous amount of time in helping people in our riding, be it with cases or problems they're having with the government, or simply listening to them and having town halls and knocking on doors to make sure that we're hearing their voices and I can properly represent them in Ottawa. So absolutely, I took some time off. I took a couple of weeks off to spend with my family. I took 2 weeks off, but outside of that, I've been working very hard, and I know the vast majority of MPs of all parties do that. And so it's a bit of a misconception that, you know, that MPs just sit around twiddling their thumbs for 6 weeks before we go back to Ottawa.
Mark, I do appreciate you coming on today to talk to us about these current goings-on in Ottawa.
Thanks so much for having me. Great talking with you.
Thanks very much. The website for Mark Holland is markholland.ca. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Planta.